Welcome. For those of us navigating the superannuation and wealth management landscape, this Q1 FY26 quarterly review is, well, it's an essential roadmap. It's not just about current trends, but the challenges we can see coming.
That's right. The pressure on the industry right now is, it's coming from every direction: governance, technology, member expectations. We've taken this quarter's material and really boiled it down to four pressure points you need to be across.
We're talking about those persistent gaps in operational infrastructure, some really stark lessons from recent scheme collapses.
And then the disruptive speed of generative AI, and critically, how we manage all the data left behind by, decades of transformation.
Okay, so our mission here is to get beyond the headlines.
Exactly. We're extracting the most actionable insights, what this all means for your governance, and, what you must change today to actually improve member outcomes.
All right, let's unpack this, starting with the systemic issues that seem to keep plaguing our operational foundations.
Which takes us straight to the topic of operational maturity, or the lack of it, specifically around interoperability. This is actually the third time we visited this in this series.
Right, following the Q3 and Q4 FY25 reports, the fact that we're talking about it again, that says a lot.
It really does.
So, interoperability. The ability for systems, funds, vendors to all exchange and use information seamlessly. It sounds technical, but this is the bedrock of efficiency, isn't it?
It is. It's about avoiding duplicated work and keeping costs low for members. But we need to be clear, this isn't just about, your own internal systems talking to each other. We're focused on the industry-level problem, how funds, administrators, custodians, insurers, how they all connect. And right now, that connectivity is, frankly, fragile. It creates real operational risk.
The gold standard everyone points to is SuperStream. Why did that work so well when other efforts haven't?
Its brilliance was forcing consistency. It mandated a single data format for contributions and rollovers. That's it.
And that one change drove everything else.
Exactly. It drove automation, cut down on manual handling, and it spurred innovation. Suddenly, payroll providers could integrate directly. It proved the model. Standardization equals better, faster, cheaper outcomes for members.
But the problem is, outside of contributions and rollovers,
the standards just fall off a cliff.
so the review points to three big missing children. Where do we urgently need to replicate that SuperStream success?
The first one is, I think, the most critical for member safety right now: a structured fin crime and cyber data sharing model. Scams and fraud are just rising exponentially. Protecting member savings isn't a competitive issue anymore. This has to be a rising tide lifts all boats scenario.
But sharing real-time intelligence on scams, that's a huge governance hurdle, isn't it? I mean, how do you get competing funds to share sensitive security data?
It requires structure. It's not about just, emailing internal risk reports around. We need a centralized utility, a network, that manages the exchange of anonymized structured intelligence.
So you're sharing patterns and indicators, not personal information.
Precisely. The material is very clear on this. If we don't build this shared defense, we're just going to keep fighting individual battles against organized crime that's operating at network speed.
That makes the need for collective defense very clear. What's the next friction point?
Insurance. You have members hitting friction at the absolute worst possible time in their lives. There are currently no consistent insurance data standards for exchanging claims data. It leads to frustrating delays, manual processes. We fully expect regulatory pressure to start driving this because the cost of this friction is just unacceptable.
And the third gap, that links directly to the big demographic shift we're all preparing for, the move to retirement.
Absolutely. As the retirement space moves from, ideas on a whiteboard to actual implementation, advice needs robust connectivity. We're talking seamless integration across super balances, bank accounts, government data from the ATO and Centrelink.
And in the current consumer data, right, or CDR, that's not the answer.
It's a step, but it's just not fit for purpose. Not for the complexity of retirement solutions. Things like annuities, they need live, integrated data flows to function. Without better open architectures, we will simply fail to deliver these new retirement solutions at scale.
And the cost of that lack of standardization, it isn't just efficiency, is it? It's catastrophic risk. And the collapse of the Shield and First Guardian Master Funds, that's devastating real-world evidence of what happens when these controls fail.
It is, and the scale is just heartbreaking. Almost 12,000 investors are facing the loss of their entire retirement savings.
The numbers are staggering. 480 million for Shield, 590 million for First Guardian.
And it's so easy to just focus on the dollar figures, but you think about those 12,000 people. This wasn't just a failure of an investment scheme, it was a failure of trust at the very end of people's working lives.
The report lays out this deeply complex web of failures. You have financial advisors funneling clients through platforms, licensees getting multi-million dollar payments, even lead generators finding legal ways to get around anti-hawking rules.
And the scrutiny, quite rightly, went beyond just the responsible entities. It went to the platform trustees, even the research houses like SQM Research, who had initially rated both schemes as favorable.
So it raises a critical question for every trustee out there. The failure was, yes, managerial and ethical, but can we mitigate this happening again using better data and tech controls?
That's the crux of it. Is more technology really the answer to a failure of ethics?
Or is it just treating the symptom?
Well, the argument is that it's about building a better immune system. You have to embed controls that make this kind of misconduct statistically harder to pull off. The report identifies four of these controls. First, strengthening due diligence.
So moving beyond the annual check the box review.
Exactly. Beyond static disclosures, trustees need to automate the ingestion and AI analysis of data from multiple external sources, ASIC registers, credit reporting, ownership data. You need dynamic monitoring.
No, it's constantly recalculating risk based on new information.
Yes, and it's specifically designed to uncover those hidden related party risks that a manual checklist will always miss.
Okay, the second control is detecting unusual activity. We know both schemes had these rapid inflows from a small group of advisors.
The data to see that existed, but it was siloed. The key is to integrate your registry data, your platform transaction data, and your advice licensee data.
And if you do that,
you can build alerts that flag these irregular patterns immediately. That prompts a human investigation before the scheme gets too big to fail.
And third, using member engagement as a protective measure, educating members.
But it can't be generic. You use behavioral analytics to identify members who are most likely being targeted, maybe based on their search history. Then you can provide personalized, interactive education on what a scam looks like. You're weaponizing their own awareness.
And the fourth point, this brings us right back to our first topic, sharing information across the ecosystem.
Yes. Failures like this erode trust for the entire industry. The report cites HUB24, who actually declined to host these schemes after their own due diligence.
Right.
Imagine if they could have shared that risk assessment, securely, of course, with others. We need frameworks for this. It has to become standard to share findings on products that present a clear danger to members.
Okay, moving from risk mitigation to, well, radical acceleration, let's talk about generative AI. The third article introduces vibe coding.
Vibe coding, yeah. It's a direct response to the problem of slow deployment. Superfunds are constantly facing shifting regulations, you know, CPS 230, APRA reporting updates.
And new ideas take months to deploy, often missing the window.
Exactly. Vibe coding allows you to create working prototypes without typing a single line of code.
So it's using Gen AI to translate human intent, the vibe, into working code, fast, prioritizing the essence over, you know, meticulous handcrafting.
That's the operational definition, yes.
Yeah.
It's prompt-to-code acceleration. It's co-creation in controlled sandboxes. Instead of debating documents for weeks, your domain experts and tech people can converge on a tangible, running artifact.
And that clarifies intentions and validates ideas so much earlier.
It massively reduces the ambiguity and scope creep that just plagues big IT projects.
And the report outlines clear use cases. Where does this speed make a difference right now?
Look at regulatory readiness. With new reporting requirements always coming down the pipe, an experienced compliance person can now prototype dashboards for the board in days. They can surface risks, validate if they're interpreting a new rule correctly.
Which is just exponentially faster than the traditional software development cycle.
It's not even comparable. And you have the same benefits for member onboarding, for operational efficiency, for technology and transformation projects. You're turning these abstract conversations into tangible mock-ups and decision trees.
But with that speed comes risk. You've just given staff a tool that can generate code faster than governance can assess it. What's the central challenge here?
The challenge is cultural, not just technical. We have decades of frameworks built on painful, costly software failures, change control, testing regimes.
And we have to apply this to this new, super fast AI development.
We have to. The risks are real. Prototypes getting mistaken for finished products, outputs escaping the sandbox, the rise of shadow IT.
How do you stop that shadow IT boom when everyone has a coding assistant in their pocket?
You don't try to stop it. You contain it and you channel it. True innovation here is the marriage of the AI tool with the human craftsman's knowledge. Governance has to focus on mandatory controlled sandboxes and strict automated review gates before anything AI-generated gets near a production environment.
Speaking of production environments, let's pivot to our final topic, dealing with the systems that vibe coding will eventually replace. When a fund completes a big transformation, an SFT, a platform transition, it leaves behind these old systems full of historical data.
And that's the multi-million dollar paradox. You don't migrate all the historical data closed accounts, old letters, because it adds enormous cost and risk to the project.
But you can't switch the old system off.
You can't. You're legally required to keep that data for compliance, for audit, for member servicing. And that creates this huge operational drag. You're paying maintenance fees, license costs. You need scarce expertise just to keep an old, inactive system alive.
The solution presented is deliberate archiving, separating the data obligation from the system obligation.
That's it. It's a calculated, governance-led decision. You extract, cleanse, and store that historical data in a purpose-built repository. One that's designed for retention and retrieval, not for daily processing.
So you can finally decommission the redundant systems.
And save massive ongoing costs while staying compliant.
But hold on, isn't migrating the data to an archive just as hard as migrating to the new core platform in the first place?
There are different processes with different goals. Migrating to a new core system is complex because you're transforming data for live operational use. Archiving is just about structured retention. It's typically less complex because the data model is simpler. It's about proof of record, not operational logic.
So this is less a tech solution and more a governance strategy.
It's entirely governance driven, and it improves governance by centralizing historical records under consistent security controls. The key insight is that the regulations tell you what data to keep, not the technology you have to use to access it.
Which means the organization actually gets lighter, not heavier, after a transformation.
If you plan for it. The best time to plan for archiving is before a system becomes redundant. You build it into the transition scope itself.
That wraps our analysis of the Q1 material. We've covered, well, four crucial pillars. The need for industry-wide interoperability, the mandate for tighter data controls after those scheme failures, the potential and governance of vibe coding, and the necessity of deliberate data archiving.
And if you connect all those points, it raises a vital strategic question. You have this pressure to increase internal agility with tools like vibe coding. At the same time, you have this critical need to build secure, standardized external infrastructure for things like fincrime and insurance data. So for every professional listening, the question is this: where should the sector dedicate its most valuable resources this year? To internal acceleration or to collaborative ecosystem maturity and collective defense? Something to think about.